You're about to hear the Sunday sermon from the Grapevine Church of Christ in Grapevine, Texas, a family who's devoted to giving our lives to and living our lives for Jesus Christ. If you have any questions about today's lesson, visit us on our website, www.grapevinechurch.com. Thanks for listening.
So in 1935, there was a man named Jim Braddock. He was about to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world. He was fighting a man named Max Baer. Y'all have seen the movie, Cinderella Man. Ron Howard put it out, was it early 2000s? It was still the Depression, 1935, and Jim Braddock, like many others, was struggling to survive. He was having a hard time. He was finding odd jobs. He had started out well as a boxer, and then he lost some fights, and he was working odd jobs just to put food on the table. Took him a few years, but he finally made his way to where he could fight for the title heavyweight championship. During one memorable interview, he was asked what he was fighting for. His answer? Milk. I said, what? I'm fighting for milk. What I find fascinating is that he was fighting so his kids wouldn't have to worry about food. Jim Braddock knew what he was fighting for, and he would go on to win the title in one of the biggest upsets in boxing history. So flash forward 55 years. 55 years later, Buster Douglas stands right next to the heavyweight champion of the world, Mike Tyson. Buster entered this fight, the underdog, with a lot of baggage. His mother had died just a few weeks before this fight. His nephew was struggling with issues with his kidney. I think there was supposed to be a kidney transplant and something happened. And this guy walked into the ring with a lot of baggage. He made it 8 rounds before he got knocked down. 8 rounds with Mike Tyson. I think 8 seconds I probably couldn't handle with Mike Tyson. 8 rounds Buster handled Mike Tyson. The referee started counting. One. Two, three, struggling to get up, four, five, six, he's still struggling, seven, he gets to his feet, eight, he stumbles, nine, the bell rings, he's saved, he gets to go back to his corner. What happened next was another upset. This was our generation's real Rocky Balboa. So here we have Buster Douglas knocked Mike Tyson out the very next round. After getting up, after almost being counted out, standing to his feet, Buster Douglas wins. Now this is not a sermon on boxing, but these are very inspiring stories. The reason I tell you this is because just like Braddock, Buster knew what he was fighting for. Turns out his mother had told all of her friends, my son will be winning this title fight. So Buster had a choice. He could either let his mom be the woman who was just bragging on her son, or he could turn his mama into a prophetess. Buster knew why he was fighting. He never really maintained this status for the rest of his life. But in this moment, Buster knew why he fought. His why kept him going. His why pushed him through to the very end. So in John 10:10, Jesus says this. He says, the thief comes only to kill, steal, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it to the full. God came close to us. He did not come to scold or to condemn. God came to love. To give us life. And why did God come to give us life? It very clearly it says in John 3:16, we all know this, let's all read it together. For God so loved the world, you can read it louder, that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Why did God come close? Why did he come to offer us life? One word, love. Today, I want to talk about your why. I want to talk about the why behind the what. Now get ready, because the language is going to be a little interesting today. I want you to think about your why. Now, I know we don't typically talk about our why that often. Usually, we talk about our what, because the what is usually what we're most concerned with. What we're doing, what we're saying, what kind of life we're living. In today's world, we are very concerned with what. What our job is, what our beliefs are, what we're producing, what we're valuing, what our value is, what our image is. It's very important. But what I will tell you is that we can do and we can live for a lifetime, but if we don't know why we're doing or living, then we may never really truly find that life, that abundant life that Jesus came to offer. And hear this, I'm going to tell you this, our what is subject to change if our why isn't clear. What we do is subject to change if our why is not clear. Turn in your Bibles to 2 Chronicles chapter 24. I love these stories. The kings of Israel and Judah were some fascinating people. I've read the Kings and Chronicles more times than I can remember. I love them. I love the stories of the kings. Some were great kings and most were not. But the writers, they always give us a little hint as to whether or not the king, what the king is going to be like whenever they start out a particular chapter. They usually say so-and-so was so many years of age when he became king and did what was right in the eyes of the Lord or what was evil in the eyes of the Lord. So I'm a little morbid, so whenever it says evil, I thought, okay, this is going to be juicy. I'm ready for this. A while back, I read a poster. It's on a really interesting website that is really depressing. And it said, you know those motivational posters? You know, have an eagle flying. Well, this one is a nice picture, but really depressing statements. And one of them was a picture of a shipwreck. And underneath it said, what if your life was purely meant to serve as a warning to others? That's nice, isn't it? Oh, I hope that's not me. One particular king in the Old Testament fits this bill specifically. He came to the throne after a very difficult time. His father died, and grandmother, thought, uh-oh, my son's dead. She went a little bonkers, and she started killing everyone in the royal family because she wanted power and control. One of the king's wives saved a son and hid him. I won't go into more detail, but a priest named Jehoiada had been hiding this grandson, this heir to the throne, in the temple. And after several years, he made his move and he rallied the people around him. They disposed of the traitors and they put Joash on the throne. Now, as all of these chapters begin, I love it, we get to see what kind of a king Josiah is going to be. They're giving us a little snapshot. So let's read, starting in verse number 1. This is what it says. Joash was 7 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 40 years, which if you read a lot of the history, 40 years is a long time for a king to reign in that period. You have a couple, maybe one, that reigned 50 plus years. Not many who reigns 40. Most of them was between 2 and about 8 to 10 years. Very violent and volatile. 40 years. His mother's name was Zibiah. She was from Beersheba. Joash did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Yes, all the years of Jehoiada the priest. Huh. That's interesting. It's a curious little qualifier, isn't it? He did what was right all the years of Jehoiada the priest. Sounds kind of like me when I was a teenager. Scott did what was right in the eyes of his parents as long as they were around. Maybe I could have said, as long as people were watching, Scott did some good things. In some ways, I can relate to this man. For a king to do good in the eyes of the Lord and to be recognized as such, that's a great thing. To have that, you know, in the chronicle of your life, he did what was good in the eyes of the Lord. Now, what this meant was, after such a violent time, that, you know, some neat things were about to happen. He was about to clean house. So let's continue. Some people are about to get what's coming to them. Verse 4, sometime later, after he had been a king, he decided to restore the temple of the Lord. This is a big thing, because the temple of the Lord, apparently before him, had been, I would say, abandoned for the most part. As long as Jehoiada lived, this high priest, burnt offerings were presented continually in the temple of the Lord. Now, this meant that before him, that period before him, nobody was using the temple. It was a, I would say, not necessarily abandoned, but it wasn't really taken seriously. You know, which is funny, because the temple is actually where they hid him for 7 long years. And it shows you how much good old grandma liked the temple, how much she considered the temple. You know, grandma thought, well, I'm not going to go to the temple. I'm not even going to go in there. So he was able to survive in the temple. So Joash, he brings things back to how they're supposed to be. He helps bring people back to an understanding of who God is, how he is to be worshipped. This is a good thing that he did. Imagine how exciting this must be. Now, if we were to look at Joash's his actions, then we would see some amazing things. But if we started looking at his why, I think we'll see that Joash's what begins to change. So let's read a few more verses. Start going to verse 15. Now Jehoiada was old and full of years, and he died at the age of 130. Whew, can you imagine? And they didn't even have Tylenol back then. He was buried with the kings in the city of David because of the good he had done in Israel for God and his temple. This is a pretty significant sentence. He's buried with the kings. This is how much they thought of Jehoiada, buried with the kings. After the death of Jehoiada, the officials of Judah came and paid homage to the king, and he listened to them. They abandoned the temple of the Lord, the God of their ancestors, and worshipped Asherah poles and idols. I'm not even going to go into Asherah poles, but it is vile. I see this story. We read this story, and we think, no! It's like we're watching a movie, you know, and we see the killer over here, and the guy's just, you know, brushing his teeth. No! I mean, I look at this and I say, what are you thinking? There's such great things that can happen here, and you listen to people who paid you homage? As we look deeper, I see a king whose why is not clear. All the time he's with Jehoiada, this priest, all the time, this man of God, he never once adopted this faith as his own. Never. Which means that the reason behind all of his actions weren't to please God or to bring back God to his people. His why was all about fear and living up to somebody's expectations. Not a genuine love for God. And when Jehoiada died, Joash's why died with him. His purpose wasn't strong enough to shield him from evil. It wasn't even strong enough to guide him toward God, and the people knew it. And I'll tell you, a lot of people have an agenda. And these people had an agenda. And whenever they came to Joash, they knew he was not a very strong man with a purpose. I mean, I can just imagine, Jehoiada's body is not even cold, and they're in there, and they're paying him homage, they're telling him how awesome he is, and I'm sure the conversation was probably like, oh, good king, Jehoiada was a great man, yes, he was, but he's gone now, and you know what, it's a modern time, and you know, people need to move on, and you know, people really, they weren't really ever happy with Jehoiada and the things he did. Let them do what they want to do. Because they love you, O king. You're a great king. And if you let them do that, then they'll love you even more. He abandoned the temple of the Lord. Everything. I mean, the Jews have one thing at this point. One thing, and that's to follow God. That is their thing. And Joash says, Everything Joash did was about making himself look good, positioning himself, endearing himself to others. And the problem with this is that when the others that you are endearing yourself to are evil, then your desire for approval and acceptance will lead you to evil. Joash never really determined his why. So you know what? Someone else did it for him. In the end, it wasn't strong enough to keep him following God. So the question is, what is the why behind what it is you do? And I know what many of you do. I see some successful people here. I see passionate people, people I love. I see people who are leaders, people who are passionate followers. I see people who give and who sacrifice, who care for one another. I see people who are doing some wonderful things. But today I'm going to ask you to consider for yourself why you do that. And if you don't do these things, if you haven't fully embraced God, fully embraced God's people, if you think you can have church without the people, why? Now, when we think of some people in Scripture, Jesus specifically, we think of someone who knew exactly why he was doing what he was doing. He knew why he lived. He knew why he died. He knew his limits. And it says in John 5:30, it says, "By myself I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear, and my judgment is just, for I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me." I mean, we know Jesus' what and his why, and it was to please his Father in heaven. Jesus' why was to please God, and his purpose led him to finish what he started. Apostle Paul is very similar. He tells us in 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 4, "We speak as those approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel." We're not trying to please people, but God, who tests our hearts. And I've been asking myself this question, so this is not something I'm just putting on you. What is your why? I mean, why do you do what you do? I'm not talking about professions. Professions change. Passions, they change. They evolve. I'm talking about your purpose, your mission on this earth in the place God has put you. Why do you believe the things you believe? Why do you attend church as often as you do? Why do you not attend church as often as you maybe want to? Why do you live the way you do? What is your why? Is it fear? Is it keeping up with expectations of others? Is your why to please God? I mean, we may be living good lives and doing some good things, and all this is wonderful. But I want you to think deeper and think about your why. Because what you do, hear this, what you do will never be as effective as why you do it. What you do will never be as loud as why you do it. I found this short video because it speaks directly to what I'm talking about here. There's a comedian named Michael Jr. He talks about this concept, and it's very interesting. He has these moments in his concerts whenever he just talks to people, and he finds this man who is a singer, a teacher, a music teacher, on the first row, and this is what happens. Let's watch.
So you're a musical director?
Cool. Yes, sir.
All right, so let me get a couple bars of like Amazing Grace. Can you do the first part of that? Go ahead.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Wow. That bro could sing. You know what I'm saying? All right. Now, what you give me the version is if, your uncle just got out of jail. You got shot in the back when you was a kid. I'm just saying, let me see the hood version real quick, if you know which version I'm talking about. Just see if that exists. Let me see what you got.
Amazing grace.
So here's the thing. The first time I asked him to sing, he knew what he was doing. The second time I asked him to sing, he knew why he was doing it.
Love that. That hits me, because did you see how people were moved when he knew why he was doing what he was doing? The whole place changed. This is why passionate people breed passionate people. This is why whenever you find someone who strongly believes and knows why they do what they do, they just have people flock to them. Because I believe that most people in this world, we don't have a clue. We're just doing our best to keep up. God has given us some people around us who know their why, and they are very clear. I know some of us have been going through life without really knowing what our purpose really is or our mission really is. We've experienced life, but maybe not this life that Jesus came to offer. Maybe we get it in bits and pieces. But maybe this day-to-day experience has taken control. Maybe it's bogged us down. Maybe it's fogged our vision. Maybe you find yourself over your head. Maybe you've been running at this pace for so long that you're really not even sure why you're still running. Is it because you're trying to have it all? Maybe you're trying to be a success? Maybe for some of us, our why is based on what other people expect. Maybe our why is based on what we can make of ourselves, being seen in a particular way. Maybe you follow God and you've been doing it for so long, you really aren't sure why you follow. It's just something you do. And maybe you've lost your way. You're really kind of surprised you're here this morning. I want to tell you there are people here who know that feeling. There are people here who have a very clear sense of their mission, their purpose, and their why. And I want to tell you, we can help you. There are many people here who move from here to there, this way and that. They don't really know why. They need direction. They need inspiration. Sometimes that's me, and I'm sure sometimes it is you too. But there's a world out there who is lacking from their fundamental purpose in life, and that is to realize this life that God has come to offer. And I want to encourage you, we could help them. We could lead them to ultimate life in Jesus Christ. If our why is clear, then what we do will be so much more powerful and meaningful, more effective. People will see what we do, but you know what they will remember more? What can move people more than what we do is why we do it. Our purpose, our mission, our why will speak louder than anything we will ever do. And it will fundamentally shape our path. This is our question today. What is your why? Now let's go ahead and stand. We're about to sing here in just a second. I'm going to encourage you today, as you begin your year, I know a lot of us have started resolutions, and I'm sure a lot of us have already broken them, but that's okay. I want you to begin right now, and I'm going to encourage you to respond today. Maybe you need prayer. If you do, I'm right here in the front. There are people around you. Our elders are in the room. Maybe you need to recommit your way to the Lord. I'm here. Maybe you need to start brand new. We have water. I'm here. Maybe you need to discover this life that Jesus has come to offer. Maybe you just need to begin living a life of purpose. And I want to tell you that's possible today. So however you respond, do so now and do not waste this chance.
You've been listening to Grapevine Church of Christ. Subscribe to the Sermon Podcast and to our other Grapevine Church podcast to hear special behind-the-scenes content. For more information, visit our website, www.grapevinechurch.com.